This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Our final hour today of Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hope you're having a nice Tuesday. I think it's bad radio generally to just sit around talking about the weather, so I try not to do it. But the weather has been insane.
Yeah.
Like, it is all I've been thinking about is how nice it is here every single day and wondering why every May can't be like this. It's awesome. If May was like this every year, like, how awesome would Northwest be? Like, it's awesome already. But if you were to add in a May where it's generally sunny and in the 70s, it would be perfect here.
Yeah, I'd say everybody would move here, but they already are.
Right.
So
yeah, it's not like more people could move here.
No.
Everyone's already moving here.
Nope, exactly.
Man, it has been nice. And it's been fun combining that with some really good baseball, and that's what the Mariners have played. 27-19, they find themselves 8 games over .500 and a trip now to Oakland, and then they come back for a bunch of teams, as you mentioned earlier, that are not playing good ball. When half of the American League is given up before the league has already started, sort of on you to win those games against those teams. And, you know, they've been taking care of some of that business.
Yeah, and they'll be kind of curious here over the next few weeks. It'll be Jeff today, and we talk to Jeff Passan, John Morosi every other week, and over the coming weeks to see just when Jerry may pull the trigger on something, too. You know, that's not going to be too much longer with these teams that are clearly out of it. You know, when do those conversations after Memorial Day really start heating up?
Well, let's talk to Jeff Passan. We'll do it right now, of course, of Yahoo Sports here on the Venue Kings Hotline. And, Jeff, when we talked to you 2 weeks ago, you were commenting on the Mariners' rotation, and nobody had an ERA under 4, but Paxton was going to pitch that night. And you said, I think by the end of the night, Paxton may be under 4. I assume you just figured he was going to throw the no-hitter, right?
Hey, listen, I'm as prescient as they come, and he's been so good this year, man. Like, he's an all-star. If he can just, like, give me like 4 more starts or 5 more starts and get us to the all-star break, I guess it's going to be a little more than that, but get us to the all-star break, and there's no question he's an all-star at this point.
Who else on this team is looking like an all-star? I mean, we were sort of trying to come up with names, and Haniger's name comes up, Segura's name comes up in a crowded field at short. Diaz, Paxton, any of those 4 guys, or is there anyone else that I should be thinking about?
I don't know if they have another all-star, to be honest.
So just Paxton?
And that's weird to say about a team that's playing .600 baseball, right? I think if you look in the American League outfield, which in recent years has been sort of a thin position, all of a sudden it's just absolutely loaded. You know, Mookie Betts. I don't know if they're going to have JD Martinez as an outfielder or a DH. I would assume they'll have him on the ballot as an outfielder, I would hope. Maybe not, though, because if they have Jackie Bradley on there, then Martinez might be DH. Either way, Michael Brantley's been really good. Aaron Judge, George Springer, Giancarlo Stanton. I mean, there's a lot of guys there along with Mitch Haniger. And you go over to shortstop, and I would assume, and this might be a bit of a stretch, but I would assume that either Francisco Lindor or Carlos Correa is going to be elected. You know, D.V. Gregorius, even with his slump, is having a really good season. And then, by the way, Manny Machado's a shortstop, and he's OPSing 1100, and Andrelton Simmons is about as good as it gets. So those are two really difficult positions that those guys happen to play and play well.
How about Diaz? I would think Diaz is an all-star.
Yeah, yes, Diaz will be there as well. That was silly of me to overlook him, but
so
I mean, he's...
Why are you so silly this morning? Why are you trying to be silly? You're normally not silly with us.
I know. I'm silly all the time. You guys just bring it out in me.
Well, I'll tell you what was interesting, Jeff, is for the first time in some time, we had 40 minutes of full phone lines talking about the Mariners and what it is. What it is to the fans out here that have them energized, that have them believing a little bit, what they're seeing. You know, they're 27-19, and from your seat, what do you look at when you look at this Mariners club?
I don't see a 27-19 team. Like, I'm just I don't mean to be like Mr. Doomsday or anything, but the Mariners are playing at a +7 run differential right now. And when you're like, when you are more above .500 than your run differential, something is going to come back to earth. It's just almost an inevitability. And look, there are teams out there that defy run differential. There are the Baltimore Orioles a few years ago, I think, won 90-something games, and they were near an even run differential. And one of the keys to that is having a good bullpen. And, you know, lo and behold, Mariners' bullpen's been pretty good this year. And I think that's a huge part of it, but I don't know. I don't see a 90-something win team that they're putting out there on the field. Do you guys?
You know, it's funny. We were looking through it, and it's hard to figure that out. I mean, on one hand, the four guys who are making up more than 50% of their payroll, Cano, Cruz, Seager, and Hernandez, none of them has been great. I mean, Cano's done now. Mm-hmm. Cruz has been hurt. He's fourth on the team in home runs. Seager's hitting .228. Felix has an ERA over 5.5. And yet we've seen some of this turnover with those guys who you were just mentioning as and I agree with you, likely non-All-Stars, but they're playing at an All-Star level. I mean, Haniger's got an OPS of .950, and Segura has taken over some of the leadership of this team. And Zunino, even though he hits .200, hits a ton of big home runs and seems to kind of be taking over a leadership position. Ryan Healy's got 10 home runs. It does seem to kind of, I don't know, it's hard to figure out exactly what they are.
It's a sum of all those parts, and that's the only reason that they're in this spot, Jeff.
I get it. And you know what? They're a team that has hit very well with runners in scoring position. And that kind of stuff matters, man. Like Gene Segura is hitting .400 with runners in scoring position this year. That is the sort of thing that wins baseball games. And more than that, I think their OPS is something like 100 points higher than their opponents with runners in scoring position. That is how you win games right there. Those are the things that you look at the +7 run differential, you're like, eh, really? And if these things even out in the end, you know, if they start regressing a bit with runners in scoring position, and if the other teams start hitting a little better with runners in scoring position, then suddenly the record will get a little bit closer to the run differential. But there are teams, I think, that have the ability to do well in such situations. And I believe that is a skill. I know that goes against sabermetric dogma. I absolutely believe in the slow heartbeat and in the power of it. And I don't know that it's assigned to the people that we assign it to necessarily. Like, I think that Derek Jeter's slow heartbeat worked every bit as good in April and May and June as it did in October.
Makes sense. Talking to Jeff Passan here. So we were hoping to catch up with you last week, and timing just kind of didn't work. But I mean, it was pretty crazy here when Robinson Cano first gets hurt, and then a day later we find out that he's been suspended for 80 games. It's one story in Seattle. I know it's sort of a different story nationally. Nationally, it's a New York story more than anything else because,
right,
of course, he's not really the Mariners' Robbie Cano. He's just former Yankee Robbie Cano, at least in the New York press. And I was just so touched to see the Yankees media. The New York media. It's hard to tell sometimes. Come out and say, oh, yeah, the Yankees always expected that something like this would happen, which to me is the biggest crock I've ever heard. But what was your reaction when you heard?
Hold on a second.
Crock.
Hold on a second. Let me posit this to you. And I don't know. I haven't read, you know, the We Expect This. Has anyone mentioned that Robbie Cano's assistant was like caught up in the Biogenesis thing?
Yes. You know who mentioned it? Mark Teixeira. Okay. Mark Teixeira mentioned it. Former Yankee Mark Teixeira on Michael Kay's show. Who's Michael Kay? Oh, Michael Kay does the games for the Yankees. It was amazing how all those connections were drawn.
Jeff, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to scratch this itch?
But it's just, it's typical.
I actually, you know, watching somebody slowly melt down in real time is really like it. Like a couple weeks ago on the Yahoo Sports MLB podcast, we always, at the end of the second segment, we always ask a question: am I a bad person?
Mm.
And my question that week was, am I a bad person for enjoying watching the volcano eruption in Hawaii?
Yes.
Because, like, all of the devastation and all of the terrible things that happened to human beings there, I was fascinated by the volcano just slowly creeping along and enveloping cars. And similarly, I see this rage slowly creeping out of Mike and beginning to envelop him.
You should have been really here when I first read thing. Joel Sherman's column on it, and it was more than a slow rage at that point. It was pretty fast. Regardless, how did you react when you saw the news on Cano? What'd you think?
I wasn't surprised. No, I'm just kidding.
That was a bad person.
You're a bad person now for making me feel that way.
You know what? I'm going to interrupt you every time you're a bad person. That's a bad person.
Yeah.
It was almost the same way as I tend to react and respond when all of these things happen, which is, like he's a baseball player. I mean, there are, and this has nothing to do personally with Robinson Cano or my belief that he may or may not have been using something. If you would have asked me beforehand, is Robinson Cano using, I would have said, probably not, but he's a baseball player. And that is, to me, the legacy of performance-enhancing drugs in baseball. It's not that Barry Bonds set the home run record single season in career. It's not that these numbers were inflated and you had Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. It's that for eternity, ad infinitum, I personally am always going to look at these guys and say, they're probably not using, but they're a baseball player, so they might be. And I'm okay with that. My position on performance-enhancing drugs has evolved over time to the point that I don't think we have an honest enough conversation, frankly, about the benefits of some of them used in a particular way. I'm not looking for anybody to go out and get forearms like Popeye and get biceps like, Tony Atlas. I don't want these gigantic, cartoonish players. But if there's something out there that allows a player to get back on the field sooner, would you rather see a great player or would you rather see his replacement? And I think every fan out there would say, I'd rather see a great player. So if we have these tools, the only reason that they are not used, by the way, is because they are stigmatized. And the fact that they're stigmatized is because they're not put out there by drug companies that have monopolized Capitol Hill and have bought out our congressmen. And the difference between some of these drugs and the PEDs out there are minuscule. If that's the only reason that they're not legal, because we're scared, because something has a stigma attached to it, I think we're having the wrong conversation.
Interesting. Always intriguing with you, Jeff. You create a lot of conversation for us. You did last week in our topic. I'm just curious here. In 2 weeks when you join us, we'll be about 60 games into this baseball season. Are these Mariners still going to find themselves 8, 9, 10 games over 500 and very relevant?
Well, I don't know who they're playing, so let me look up the schedule.
You got some Oakland, Minnesota, Tampa.
Oakland, Minnesota, Texas. Yes, they'll be perfectly fine. They're going to be in good shape.
Will they make a deal by then? And I think that's sort of the next place to go is immediately following the Cano store. I mean, it's like, all right, well, they've saved $11, $12 million. They're going to go spend it on an outfielder. And I don't know if they're going to do that or not. But what would you do with some of that money or what could they do?
It's just tough to tell at this point what the market is going to look like. I mean, the only guy I can see really moving in earnest before June 1st, and I don't think it's going to happen, but it would make sense for a team to say, I want 4 months of Manny Machado, not, two or two and a half or whatever it may be. The Orioles are horrible. They know they're not going to re-sign him, and so they should just go out and get as very much as they possibly can at this point. Do the White Sox have an outfielder that you want? No, of course not. Do the Royals have an outfielder? It's funny. John Jay should have signed with the Mariners this offseason.
Yep.
Like you guys know the story about that, right?
Yep.
I mean, he turned down a lot of money from them, or a lot more than he ended up getting. And he's an interesting guy. He's certainly an interesting guy who I think would fit the bill for what they're looking for, but for a real true impact guy, I just don't know if there's anyone out there at this point, or frankly, if there's going to be anyone out there. The outfield class for all the hullabaloo about the free agent class of 2018-19, outfield is not exactly one of those hot spots. I mean, A.J. Pollock's not going anywhere. Bryce Harper's not going anywhere. And beyond that, I mean, do you want Andrew McCutchen? No, probably not.
They certainly don't want to spend a lot, and my feeling has been all along that they'll do something small in the outfield, and that if there's a big move to be made, it's going to be pitching-wise. And if you can spend $12 million, can you spend it on a couple of relievers and maybe a starter? I mean, are there going to be some arms available, which is truly, I think, where this team is going to need help?
Well, I'll tell you what the problem with your premise is here, and it goes back to what we've talked about with this organization for a long time now. Their farm system is terrible.
Yep.
Their farm system is absolutely terrible. And if you're trading for frontline type guys, you're going to need to give up talent because the money, like the money's immaterial. You know, this is a $10 billion industry. Ultimately, you know, 10, 15, 20 million here and there, that's couch change to these people. So they want talent. And if the best you're doing is like, is Kyle Lewis really the best you're doing?
Yes. Yeah, it is. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, if you're going to do it, it needs to be because somebody's looking to unload a contract and you feel like you can get something because they don't want to pay for it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing down there. Like, really, it's kind of sad. and that's why if they have the opportunity to go for it now, I almost think that there's a bit of a value play here in the Mariners just saying, screw it, we're all in. Because they're going to have some bad years coming up, man. They're going to have some bad years because they just don't have anything down on the farm. And if you don't have a productive farm system that is feeding your big league team, either you're going to have to go out there and value shop for players on the free agent market, or you're going to have to make some incredible trades. And look, Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger for Taijuan Walker and Ketel Marte, pretty good trade.
Yep.
Like, those are the kinds of trades you're going to have.
Oh, I love you.
I mean, it's not going to produce any all-stars thanks to the East Coast bias and all that. I mean, it's not like Haniger's not having a better year than Stanton or anything.
This has nothing to do with it.
A little bit.
You think Mitch Haniger's been one of the... let's just do this. You think Mitch Haniger's been one of the six best outfielders in the American League this year?
I think after Betts and Trout, you can certainly make an argument that he's been right there with anybody else. It doesn't mean he's been better than all those other guys, but he hasn't been significantly worse. I mean, you mentioned Giancarlo Stanton. And got a texter here sending in a text. I mean, their numbers are roughly equivalent. You could make the argument that Haniger's better with the defense.
Haniger's been better than Stanton this year.
But Stanton probably make the All-Star game.
Yeah, because...
but that's the point. I mean, like, it doesn't make it... The world isn't a horrible place for it, but that's what it's going to happen.
Hey, Boston, have you thought about having Salk on your podcast? Because I think it'd be fascinating.
Just to argue with Jeff.
Well, here's this premise. Well, I got this premise. I think everybody would be better for it.
Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Here's the thing. One of these things is not like the other, okay? Mike Trout, Clayton Kershaw, Joey Votto, Jim Thome, Mike Salk. The first four have been on our podcast.
Oh.
The last will not be.
I was trying to figure out what the difference was. I mean, Tomey's a lefty. I'm not, so it's not that. Tomey's a big dude. I guess I'm smaller. Votto's Canadian, so they don't really have that much in common. It feels like I fit right in.
You and Trout have, like, the same shaped head. You have, like, the square jaw and everything, like, the strong chin.
Classic,
like,
good looks.
I don't have his neck, though. I don't have the neck that looks like... I won't even get into it.
Thank you, Passan.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks. See you, buddy.
See you, fellas.
There you go. There's Jeff Passan, one of my favorites. Of course, joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline, as he does every other week.
When I think of the two that we get a chance to talk to on every Tuesday at 9 o'clock.
Morosi.
One is like this. So Molly's got this, what's called clinically a frozen shoulder right now. It's like super painful. It's like a bicep tendon.
Well,
yes.
No wonder she forgot your anniversary.
Yes. So she's in a lot of pain. So she's got like this old lady electric blanket. Right, that she's got to kind of lay on and warm it up. When I think of Morosi, I think of electric blanket. He just warms everything up. He makes you feel better. And then Passan, as you perfectly described him, is just a wet blanket.
Oh yeah,
you just throw it right on it. Just ugh. He just oh, they're gonna be terrible. Oh, they're bad. Oh, the win loss record and the run differential, they're gonna even up. Like, just it really doesn't matter. what they do at 27-19, just not going to be impressed. Not going to be impressed. And it's the beauty of the two of them.
I really enjoy Jeff.
I do too.
I mean, he really is. He is a negative Nelly. He is a Debbie Downer. I mean, he Rachel Dratch has nothing on him. His Debbie Downer is perfect. But he, but he's a really smart dude, and yeah. And I thought his take there on the PEDs is a really interesting one about, you know, what the future could be. I don't think that'll ever happen, but I think it's interesting. Yeah. And he tells it like it is. I mean, he's right. Mitch Haniger's not going to be an all-star. He might have a shot to be sort of that voted in at the end where they put five extra guys and the fans can kind of do their best to try to get him in. In all likelihood, he will not be an all-star. I will be willing to bet Gene Segura isn't. And in Segura's case, I think it makes some sense. I mean, the shortstops that you're talking about, that's a really impressive list, man. I mean, unfortunately for him, as good as he's been, Francisco Lindor is great. Manny Machado is great. Carlos Correa is great and coming off a World Series. I mean, yes. You're talking about the two guys who have been in the World Series as the shortstop the last 2 years, yep. Plus Machado, whose name is everywhere, plus you're talking about Didi Gregorius. Like, there's some really
plus
impressive
Andrew Elton Simmons.
Yeah, I mean,
had a phenomenal
there's
game.
Some really yes. good competition at the yes. position. And there's a lot of good outfielders also, but the reason Haniger won't, his numbers are every bit as good as those guys. Plus, he brings good defense and speed and the five tools to the table. Yep. But he's not Giancarlo Stanton, so forget it. Nope. Well, he doesn't play in New York, so forget it.
No, and, you know, the All-Star game, they say it doesn't matter about your track record, but it does.
Of course it does.
It does.
And I fully believe this, and I've said this for years, and I really think it should be the case. The All-Star game should look at what you did the last half of last year also.
Mm-hmm.
Why, when we consistently say, oh, All-Stars, best players play their best in September when it really matters, August and September and the dog days of summer, that's when mm-hmm. it's really important to play baseball. But we never reward those guys with All-Stars.
Nope.
You become an All-Star for what you do in the first 3 months of the season, which don't mean as much. I would absolutely look at what somebody did in the last couple of months of last year, because that's what's important, and that's what you've done over the last calendar year.
Well, and to add to your tweet that you know caught some fire a couple days ago, I mean, Felix has been a multiple All-Star. Cano's been a multiple All-Star. Cruz has been a multiple All-Star. Seager's been an All-Star, been on the fringe of it a couple different times, and none of them are close. I mean, all of those guys are not even anywhere near the equation at all this
not
season.
Right now.
And yet you're 27-19. And yet you find yourself, you know, in this situation simply because
good.
Of Segura, Haniger, Diaz, Paxton.
And good. I hope the Mariners hear everything Jeff had to say. I hope everyone in that clubhouse hears all of the doubt and all of the belief that they are going to fall apart and their run differential is not good enough and their farm system doesn't have enough.
And
to
their
go.
OPS,
I hope they are
points
that.
Better than their opponents, and it's going to even out.
But unfortunately, I don't think it's like football where you can just play the everybody's against us card the same way.
Nope.
It just doesn't work that way in baseball. You can't get mad because everybody thinks you stink and then turn that into some sort of fuel. I don't think.
Nope.
Maybe they can. I don't know. I'm not going to put anything past him. So good stuff from Jeff Passan, who is at the very least entertaining to talk to. You didn't think so? You
don't like talking to Jeff? Good. It wasn't glowing.
Well, it wasn't good news. It was still fun, wasn't it?
Stuff from Jeff Passan.
You don't find that fun?
I do. I love watching Howdy and Kyle like react to some of that back there.
Like, there's just nothing down there. Like, really, it's kind of sad.
What is he talking about? Is he talking about the farm system? Or is he talking? I thought he was talking about like my brain. There's just nothing in there.
No, there's nothing in the farm. I mean, they're going to be horrible in some years.
Like, really?
Do you remember that Rachel Dratch bit, Debbie Downer? She's talking about like...
You're enjoying your day. Everything's going your way. Then along comes Debbie Downer. Always here to tell you about a new disease. A car accident or killer bees.
Jeff Passan. Very simple. All right, coming back to our biggest story of the day. We'll do it next. Don't go anywhere. It's Brock and Salt.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salt.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
I got something here for you, so you ready for this?
Yeah.
Remember the scene in Silence of the Lambs?
Nope.
You never saw that?
Nope.
You never saw Silence of the Lambs?
Nope.
He doesn't like scary movies, Brock. Why
have you never
see
seen
that?
Silence of the Lambs?
I don't know. I just never have.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's on you.
Sorry.
There's a scene in it where Jodie Foster, who is Clarice in that, is watching with one of her FBI or CIA, one of her buddies in the school, right? So she's young, she's in school, and she's learning the ropes, and they're watching this state senator whose daughter had been kidnapped by Buffalo Bill. And she had gone on television, the senator had, this politician had, pleading to whoever kidnapped her daughter. Mm. And Jodie Foster's sitting there, and Clarice, sitting there like, oh, she's nailing it. She's doing it exactly right. She's making a personal plea. Like, they're watching their textbook come to life in this interview. And I thought yesterday of Bobby a little bit like that. That is, he's making the case to Earl to come back. Right? I found myself like, yes, you're personally connecting. Right? And by the way, none of this was premeditated yesterday. It wasn't. I don't think Bobby, you know, was sitting there like, oh, I'm going to say this and I'm going to nail it this way and I'm going to make it personal and I'm going to praise him. No, I don't think in the sense of like he put this outline together. I think that was pretty genuine. He absolutely was going to make that point over the course of 20 minutes. That was premeditated.
But maybe not the way it was made.
Yeah, not the way that it was done or scripted or anything else. But to
before
me,
we get off, I would like to take this time to shout out to Earl Thomas. You know, I think he's an amazing player. I think he's an amazing person. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. And just let him know that, you know, we over here, you know, wishing for the best in that situation. And we're thinking about him. And I just want him to know that from this end.
And you followed up with why. Why are you making this personal plea? And Bobby went further.
He needs to know that we appreciate him over here because he's a talent that, you know, you're not going to ever see another person like him. You know, ever again, play the football field. There's nobody that's going to be able to start from one side of the hash and be able to get all the way to the other side of the field.
So Bobby really spoke to him as a peer, like, man, you're my teammate and we love you and we need you. He also spoke to him as a football guy. Like, nobody can do what you can do. And Earl, to me, getting to know him over the last 8 or 9 years, he is a guy that needs to feel that love, to feel that appreciation. You know, he said as much at the Pro Bowl. The last time he's spoken really on the record about any of this was Earl talking about needing to feel some of that appreciation and love.
I know me, so I won't allow myself to even, you know, go out there and, you know, just risk it all, you know, just if they're not, you know, having faith in me and a long-term deal. I just got to protect myself at the end of the day, me and my family. That's the first thing. Like I said, I don't feel comfortable just going out there without signing a long-term deal.
He needs that faith in him. You need to show it to me. And Bobby, I think, was doing all he can from a player perspective. Like, dude, we not only have faith in you, you're the greatest supply. And let's face it, man, there's very few that can do what you can do. And he's right. You know, I was listening to Dave yesterday on the afternoon show, Dave Wyman, former linebacker, the Danny, Dave, and Moore show. And he's talking about, yeah, there's no one like him. There's no safety that can get from A to B. There's a lot of safeties that can hit. There's a lot of good safeties. Eric Berry, maybe even more versatile with some of his size. But as far as covering the kind of ground in the outfield that you need to cover in this defense, there are very few that have the range of Earl Thomas. And that, to me, just kind of thinking through that yesterday and listening to a lot of the commentary on our station.
You and I kind of went in different directions a little bit because I found myself thinking a lot about Bobby and what it meant. And then once I did start to think about Earl, I kept wondering how Earl feels. And you've asked me that question before. What does Earl want? And as I've always said, good luck. How do you get inside a guy's head like that? You can't get inside anybody's head, let alone Earl Thomas. Yeah, good luck with that. But I do think that the Wagner comments are about, you know, when he's talking about watching the offseason, I felt like that was kind of a little window into what it's like to be a remaining core nucleus player on this team. You're Bobby Wagner, you're KJ Wright, you're Earl Thomas, you're Russell Wilson, you're Doug Baldwin, and all this offseason you're watching Richard Sherman leave and Michael Bennett leave, and, you know, Bobby explained what that feels like.
People don't know this, but we get alerts just like y'all get alerts. So, you know, it's not like, you know, the organization sends us a text saying, hey, this alert's about to go out. It's like, okay, I could be watching a TV show and get an alert and look up and be like, wait, that happened to us. That's our team, you know. So just for everybody to know, we find out sometimes like y'all find out. We find out on ESPN or we find out on our cell phones. You know, you get the alert pop up. And you got to understand, from my perspective, every time my phone alerted, it was somebody getting cut, somebody getting traded. And it's just like, oh, man, I got to call him. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I was happy that he was able to stay.
All right, so put aside the stupid fake laughter for whatever reason. Put aside the fact that Bobby says y'all, even though he's from California and L.A. But think about the experience of what it's like to be one of those guys. And you're watching your friends and the guys that you trust leaving. And you don't have those kind of relationships yet with the new people. Shaquem Griffin might be great. He's a fifth-round pick, and you have no relationship with him.
Tedrick and Delano and Shaquille.
You barely have that trust and relationship correct. With those guys. And by the way, you may never get it. And so for a lot of those players, part of the core, while the last few years may not have been perfect, at the very least they were familiar. They knew who was going to be there and what it was going to feel like, even if it wasn't always perfect. And all of a sudden now that is up in flux. And I think we get a sense yesterday of how Bobby Wagner is handling those changes really well. He's rising to the challenge. He's becoming the leader. He is becoming the focal point of that defense. How is Earl going to handle him? Because I don't think Richard Sherman handled them very well. I don't think that Michael Bennett handled them very well. How will Earl let the unknown affect him? I hope he doesn't. I hope he embraces the unknown, because I think that's a great way to stay on top and be great forever, and I think that's what's working for Bobby. Will Earl do that? Is he capable of it? I think Earl's got a lot of incredible features to him. Is he capable of embracing the unknown again?
Good for a question. Well, if he doesn't do it here, he's going to have to do it somewhere else.
Yeah, but he can do it with players that he thinks are going to
maybe,
be one
maybe, but
way.
That's a total unknown of a new system, and how do I fit into it? And do I have an awareness that the grass isn't always greener? If I listen to a Byron Maxwell who experienced life outside of Seattle and came back, it's like, dude, you guys got pretty good here, right? Or, you know, does he truly want to go home to Texas, you know, which he kind of screamed at the top of his lungs? Three last things here when I thought of this yesterday. Number one, you don't fool the locker room. I said that to you how many dozen times over these years. Bobby, pretty clear, he's never played with a safety like Earl and more than likely never will again if 29 is done here. That's number one. Number two, Bobby knows Earl inside and out. You know, to your point, you know, it is a familiar thing. He knows that Earl needs to feel love. He needs to feel appreciated. He needs it. Even as great as he is, that is one thing that I believe Earl, from Bobby's perspective, needs to feel. And then lastly, players largely don't want to know another player's business. Dave Wyman again, absolutely right. Danny David Moore, I didn't want to know guys' business. Hey, man, that's your business. How you want to handle it's your business. But Bobby also knows he doesn't want the drama, doesn't want the holdouts, and he doesn't want the division that so many of these
do you think
have
it's all
created
genuine?
Over the last few years. From whose perspective?
From Bobby's. Is that 100% genuine? Or is it stupid like my laugh?
No, I think that's 100% genuine. Or at least 90% genuine. And maybe some of it's his own self-interest. Like, I don't want that. You know what? I've been the guy here, unlike Bennett and Cam and Sherm and even Earl to a degree. I've been played under. So the Seahawks are owned by Football Northwest LLC. That's like their company. That's Paul's company, Football Northwest. And Bobby and KJ in particular, they played under that LLC.
Yeah.
You know, Cam and Sherm and Bennett and even Earl to a degree, they start to play under their own LLCs a little bit.
It's a big difference.
It's a significant difference.
Yeah.
And I think some of that plead yesterday is, hey, man, you know what? A lot of those other LLCs have been what? Man, they've been disbanded. They're out. In fact, Michael Bennett, not in Philadelphia. One of two players that
didn't show to them.
Not at their OTAs, their voluntary OTAs.
Man.
You know, at least for day one, couldn't get on that 13-hour flight from Hawaii, and he's just not a part of it. So, we don't have many of those LLCs left, you know. Now we're kind of all under this umbrella again. Come on back, Earl, because we could certainly use you.
I hope that Earl takes it that way, because, I would agree with all those things, Brock. And I think that's why we were talking earlier about this kind of reminding me of jumping up and down in Richard Sherman's face.
Yep.
Like, hey, you've got to come be part of the fold. And I think that's been a struggle for them the last few years.
Agreed. That was kind of a fun moment, though.
When they were jumping up and down? Yeah, but, God, why is it so hard to keep these guys together? Why? I mean,
they were young, man.
I know.
They were young, and they got rich, and they had a whole lot of success.
It honestly reads like a behind the music on one of those bands
sure
where
does.
All of a sudden everybody wanted to pull, I'm the real star here, and I'm the real star here, and I got to get paid, and I got to get paid. And quite frankly, I'm glad for the way this offseason went. I'm glad Sherman's not around. I'm glad Bennett's not around. And I would have been perfectly happy if Earl Thomas wasn't around, and you were able to bring back some other good young players that you can go win with. I'm excited about the future. Curious to see where it goes. All right, let's answer your questions as we do at the end of every show. You know how it works. You text us 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Very simple process here. You text us a question, and then we'll answer it. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Oh, good stuff here today, Brock.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
Goody, goody.
I think you'll like some of this.
Awesome.
Yep. Let's see. Should we dig right into these?
Let's go.
All right, hold on. Let me
we're here. Right, I'm here. You're here. We're here.
Jerks, I recently tracked down my first car and purchased it back from a guy over in Ellensburg.
Whoa.
What was your first car?
Wow.
I think we've had that question before, but I just was impressed with the... Have you ever thought to do anything like that?
I think mine is in the scraps.
I would think
there's
so,
no
too.
Chance.
Same. What was your first car?
83 Ford T-Bird.
Nice.
Hand-me-down from Damon.
Classic.
The only nice thing about it was the plate, the little stereo plate that you pushed the button, Kenwood, that popped off.
What was your first car that you bought?
That was a owned. Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
My father-in-law helped me buy it. Turned out it was in a front-end collision. It shook a bunch. So that was a no-go. But then I had the BMW that I won in the video game tournament.
Of course.
Drove that like a star for a year. And then my big expenditure was a 7 Series Beamer.
Yeah.
Back in
that
the day.
That doesn't fit you, though. That's so sedan-like. I can't imagine you.
I was big baller.
Yeah.
Big baller brand.
What does it say that my first two cars, the first car I ever drove and the first car that I ever bought, both brands are now extinct?
Yeah. Says a lot.
First, I had an Oldsmobile Cutlass.
Okay.
Loved that thing.
Solid.
The Cutlass was great. It had a great turning radius in that you needed to be on a 4-lane highway in order to turn around.
Were you smoking cigarettes in high school in that thing?
Oh. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Especially in then the next car, the Eagle Talon.
Oh, yeah.
That was my jam. I love that car. I would buy that car back. Little stick shift Eagle Talon.
Oh.
I love that thing.
Now, my boys, John Crack,
no
had a
CD
big
player,
old
just
truck.
A tape deck.
He had a big old, like, 1960s Ford truck. And what did Waltier have? A Gremlin. Oh, yeah. We rode around town.
I don't think I knew one person with a truck.
Oh, yeah.
I did have a friend with a great Ford Escort and another with a Dodge Omni. Those are gems.
Solid.
All right.
Next question.
Jerks, what is your favorite large breed dog? I say go big or go home. Great Dane all the way.
I mean, there's a lot of great dogs. I go Bernese Mountain Dog.
Oh, that's my answer. Absolutely.
I saw Bernese are great. I saw a St. Bernard yesterday around Green Lake. His head, I don't know how that dog can walk around with that head. It's so big.
Mm.
It just looks exhausting. No wonder it's panting.
Big fan of the Boxer. That's my favorite one.
Boxers are good.
You know, Mr. Unlimited had their third Great Dane.
I saw that.
Yeah, had some diarrhea.
They have an unlimited number of Great Danes.
Yes. Third one. Mr. Unlimited.
Jerk, speaking of that, Brock has Above and Beyond.
Yep.
Jim has Bark, his new podcast about dogs, Jim Moore.
Correct.
What should Salk's podcast be about?
Food.
Talk about that all day.
That'd be pretty
good. Let's call it Eats.
Foodie.
Eats.
But Rachel Bell already has that. She already has your
last meal. Yeah.
Sort of already about food.
Yeah.
Things everyone likes, but I don't.
What about the corollary
things
to
no
that?
One likes, but I do. I'm perfect.
That's the best
contrarian.
One.
Let's just call it contrarian.
I have all 3 hours every day to do
you
that.
Think
I don't
you
know
could
why
find
I need to have a
15 other elite friends of yours to just have an elitism podcast?
I'm telling you, this Jeff Passan and Salk podcast could really take off.
Jeff's too big for me. You heard the people
he
that
basically
on his
said
podcast.
That his podcast is too elite for you.
Yeah. He just completely elited me right out
You've
of his
been
podcast.
Out elitist.
Who would be Salk's list of some elites that he could put on his podcast with him? Passan.
Field Yates.
Oh, yes.
Keith Law.
Joe Tessitore.
Joe would not come on my podcast. Joe would barely come on our show.
Joe's eating charcuterie plates and drinking a beautiful 08 Cab Sav.
Get over yourself, Jeff.
Montanero cheese.
Next question.
Jerks,
that's my guy.
I'm stuck going to the Taylor Swift concert tonight with my wife. Do I dance to the music I don't like, or do I just stand there awkwardly the whole time? Why would you
have
to dance,
fun,
right?
Come on.
Seriously, lighten up. What's wrong with Taylor Swift? She's fun. I know the song. My kids love Taylor Swift.
I'll stay out too late. Got nothing in my brain.
How could you not dance at least a little bit? Sway or something?
Ooh-ooh. That's what people say.
Ooh-ooh.
I go on too many dates.
Yeah, don't hate on Taylor Swift.
But I can't make them stay.
She's catchy at least, right?
At least that's what people say. Yeah.
At least she wrote all of her
though,
own music.
The rap in this song is like Russell Wilson level... cringeworthy.
But Brock's right. She writes it, she plays it, she performs
she
it live.
It.
True. Oh, that's great.
Total pack.
The rap in this song is as cringeworthy as
Mr. Unlimited.
Mr. Unlimited.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
No, it is. It's that
play,
bad.
Play, play, play.
And the haters gonna hate. Hey, 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 hey.
Shake, should have gone to this time.
Should
have brought Avery.
Shake it off.
All right. That's enough of that.
Shake it off.
Yep. Shake it off.
Next question.
I think I like Bad Blood better.
I like Bad Blood, too.
There was multiple versions of it. I couldn't... There was a rap version. I couldn't figure out...
There's another one on that album I like.
Kendrick Lamar. Somehow she got Kendrick Lamar on her song.
Who's the Bad Blood about?
I forget.
Katy Perry.
Oh, having Bad Blood.
No, it's specifically Katy Perry.
Which feud is better, the Katy Perry feud with Taylor Swift or the Cardi B, Nicki Minaj feud?
It's tough.
I heard about that the other day on Howard Stern. He was interviewing one of them. They were very upset with the other.
Oh, interesting.
Let's see.
Next question.
All right, you want some food questions,
sure.
As usual? All right, yep. I got three in a row.
Okay.
What are your opinions on Jack in the Box tacos? I've never had them because every time I go to Jack in the Box, I get either a sourdough Jack or that spicy Jack chicken.
Yeah. I mean, they're good. Was it three for like 99 cents or something crazy?
I've never had it. I'm sure they're good.
Yep.
Jerks, what is the weirdest food combination that you totally love? I don't think I have one. The weirdest, I would say, and this is not weird, so I'm not going to pretend that it is, but I've become somewhat obsessed with lemon. And so I've been squeezing lemon on almost every chicken dish I make,
and it's always
better.
Marty, man.
Yeah, me and Marty Smith.
Yeah.
Marty's all over the lemon.
I don't think I really have any wood. No.
You're not going to like this one, but The Rock Pizza makes a pizza that has butter and brown sugar as a base instead of marinara sauce, still topped in mozzarella cheese.
That sounds okay.
And it's crazy good.
I mean, it's pretty good.
I would definitely try that.
Okay, last
it's crazy
food one.
Good.
What's the last foodie?
When it comes to meatloaf, what's better as a topping, ketchup or barbecue sauce?
Yeah.
I think is there something sort of in between?
Yeah.
Like where you sort of mix some ketchup and mustard together?
It kind of depends on what you're doing in that meatloaf. Are you getting funky with it? Like, you know, some shallots and putting some other fun garlic, some other stuff in it? Heavy, or are you just kind of going traditional?
I love meatloaf.
I do, too.
I really like meatloaf a lot.
I like all food.
Alki or Green Lake?
I'm biased. Alki.
I'm biased with Green Lake.
Yeah, I kind of like Alki.
The nice thing, I will speak in favor of my spot with Green Lake is just the parking and accessibility of Green Lake is a little easier than Alki.
You ever go hang out just down the Puyallup River?
Alki's so packed. Plus, you have to go all the way to West Seattle. I already live at Green Lake. Oh, not everyone has to do that.
You can hit Tiffany's.
Where is this?
Skate rink. They got now putt-putt.
Is this you all
across the street and hang out under the bridge?
Let's go.
Watch the river. Puyallup River.
How big is that river?
Brother.
It's a Marty Smith kind of river.
Really?
It's brown, too.
Really?
Ain't got a lot of glacial flow.
That river said to me, Marty.
Me and that river go way back.
Respect my flowing waters.
I'll tell you who we're getting on the show in a couple weeks for the Belmont. Marty.
Good.
He has become a horse racing specialist. Barn, that's where we got to go. We got to go in the barn.
All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Yep, that's where the hay is. It's in the barn. See you, everybody.
Their farm system is absolutely terrible because they're going to have some bad years coming up, man. They're going to have some bad years.
This is the chopper!